Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Attention for a minute if you're a college undergraduate. We are inviting college undergraduates to attend our live show this Friday morning in our Jerome L. Green performance space. We're going to have Michael Moore among our guests, joining us by video link to discuss his brand new movie, Capitalism, A Love Story, and to reflect on the 20th anniversary of the first Michael Moore film that made a splash, Roger and Me, about the president of General Motors. So come see our interview with Michael Moore via video link, though it is. And the other stuff that we're going to do, we're going to have a 20-year news and history quiz to celebrate this program's 20th anniversary. And we are inviting college undergraduates and anyone else who's around 20 years old to come to our live show this Friday in our Jerome L. Green performance space. Just send an email if you'd like to attend, and we'll get back to you. Send the email to brianlehrershow@wnyc.org, brianlehrershow@wnyc.org, for college undergraduates or other 20-year-olds to come to our Jerome L. Green performance space on Friday morning. Now, in another move that you may have not noticed from the White House, they have for the first time laid out their position on the USA Patriot Act. In a letter to congressional lawmakers, the administration said it supports extending three controversial surveillance provisions that are scheduled to expire at the end of this year. They also made sure to say they're willing to consider additional privacy protections as long as they don't weaken the effectiveness of the law. So does this mark a shift from the Bush administration on surveillance, or is it surprisingly more of the same? To explain what these three controversial provisions are and what kind of privacy protections we may see in the renewed Patriot Act is Karen Greenberg, executive director of the Center on Law and Security at the NYU Law School. Professor Greenberg, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
So the administration wrote this letter to lawmakers indicating that they support extending the three controversial provisions. Very briefly, I know one of them is the roving wiretaps that allows investigators to quickly monitor the communications of suspects who change their cell phone or communications device. It used to be a tap on one phone. What are the other two?
The other two are the lone wolf provision and the business records provision, which we often refer to as the library provision. The lone wolf provision allows the government to track a target without an affiliation to a foreign power, but all that would include a foreign terrorist organization as well. It only applies to non-U.S. citizens, and we haven't really used that one. But they'd like to maintain it. The business records allows investigators to get third parties like financial organizations, telephone companies, which is what we've paid the most attention to access records of individuals. And this has been used rather extensively. From 2004 to 2007, which is what I have the statistics for, the FISA court issued about 220 such orders. So those would be the other two, other than roving wiretaps, which I thought you described quite well.
This entire law was enacted right after 9/11 in what many considered a hurried response in an emergency situation when level heads would not prevail in drafting a law. Civil libertarians have been upset about these provisions of the Patriot Act ever since. Is this a new position for President Obama?
No, and I think, you know, their idea is to just keep the law going until it is up for renewal, which would be 3 years from the end of this year. And so that's, I think, what they'd like. Now, they have said that they're willing to talk to Congress, as you mentioned, about, you know, putting in some provisions. And there's a new bill floating around, Senators Feingold and Durbin, which suggests ways of reducing the secrecy in each one of these provisions, of expanding the privacy of individual citizens. That's a bill, and it's called the Justice Act, and it's actually a very good bill. The American Civil Liberties Union has endorsed it, and it would be it would be a good thing, at least in my opinion, for Congress to pass this. And if that happened, then this would not be a continuation of business as usual. It would be the first real check on powers that have existed now for since 9/11.
And the Durbin and Feingold bill, as I understand it, would also seek repeal of the immunity for telecommunications companies that may have participated in an illegal surveillance program on people's communication devices. But did the president support, when he was campaigning, extension of all three of the provisions that have been controversial over the years?
Well, you know, I think that he's made a number of statements when he was campaigning and before, supporting some of these, voting for them, not voting for other ones. So I would be loath to say exactly on these provisions what he'd said, and I'll bet you people could pull out different strands from different things. But what they want now is an extension of them. And I think, President Obama ran on a sense that he would push back many of the excesses of the Bush administration in terms of civil liberties. And so this would not be a sign of honoring those types of statements.
It's going to take these Democratic senators, Durbin and Feingold, liberal Democratic senators, to push back on the president's easy renewal, however, of the Bush bill.
Absolutely. And no, there's no question that this is not something he wants. His administration is indicating that they don't want to take on this fight right now. For many, and this would include myself, who, spent time immersed in the details of this, the idea that we don't push back on the larger issues of Bush administration excesses of power and invasion into individual citizens' private lives and personal lives is not really acceptable. I mean, there has to be a point, and I would hope it would come sooner than 3 years from now, I hope it would come this fall, where there's acknowledgement that there was overreaching and that we want to do things a different way going forward while still trying to keep ourselves safe as a nation.
I'm curious if you think these provisions, the business records provision, the lone wolf provision, the roving wiretaps, may have been put to use in this weekend's arrests of the terror suspects in Colorado and Queens, with New York allegedly the target. This is the alleged bomb plot by Nazibullah Zazi and his father in Colorado, as well as an imam in Queens, and they were reportedly under wiretapping and physical surveillance. Were the three provisions, or any of them, as far as you could tell, used in this investigation?
Well, the one theme that runs through these provisions and the amendments that are suggested by the Feingold-Durbin bill have to do with whether or not you're monitoring somebody, whatever it is, with a national security letter, with a roving wiretap, whether or not you're monitoring somebody about whom you have some sense that there is a terrorist connection or that they're tied to some kind of foreign terrorist group, and that you know the person. In other words, these are not just random bunching of information, or that you're just guessing at what you're doing. And in this case, it really seems that they probably did not use these in the way I've just talked about, because they knew who these people were. They were monitoring them. They are accusing them of training in a foreign terrorist camp. If there's anything that we've learned from the hundreds of trials we've had of alleged terrorists since 9/11, it's that the signal for the government to pay very close attention to individuals is when they have trained, in this case, in the in Pakistan.
And right. But does this go to the lone wolf provision of the Patriot Act, which you say has never been used? Because Zazi was apparently, allegedly, a westernized militant trained by al-Qaeda in Pakistan, whose experience and legal resident status in the United States give him the freedom to operate while attracting little attention. So if this lone wolf provision is targeting those who may be acting alone on behalf of foreign terrorist groups, is this an example of the lone wolf provision at work?
It could be. And one of the problems with this is that we don't actually know. I mean, they haven't told us, and we don't actually know so much is not transparent and so much is secretive about how we've gone about business in these terrorism trials, terrorism cases, that I can't tell you for sure exactly what they use, but it's a possibility, sure.
But people who may be listening and, you know, have been feeling perhaps relieved hearing these news stories of these arrests being made might think, well, then what's so bad about a lone wolf provision that targets people acting alone on behalf of foreign terrorist groups?
Right. They might ask that. But again, first of all, that provision applies to non-U.S. persons, right? So here we're dealing, right? So uh-huh. These are not non-U.S. persons. These are permanent legal residents, two of them, and one of them is a naturalized American citizen.
Uh-huh.
So I don't, again, I come back to
So they're in a
it.
Different category altogether.
Right, and we could lay it out for how it would be in another kind of case. But for this particular case, it's just not how we're, it doesn't seem that it would have helped or hindered. And as I say, it hasn't been used in a FISA application.
Last thing. Some people are saying that this is perhaps the most credible threat to the New York area since 9/11 of any of these various interventions that law enforcement has done. And some of them, you know, seem to be at such low-level, early formative things, the Buffalo group, the Fort Dix situation.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, some people are saying, with the bomb-making manuals this guy allegedly mm-hmm. had in his house and stuff, seem to actually be more real. Do you share that opinion?
Yes. This looks like, I mean, who knows what we'll uncover. And we're so, again, this is like the boy that cried wolf. We've had so many cases where the government overreached in the past in its accusations at the beginning, and then they fizzled or turned into different kinds of cases. You know, right now these people are being charged with lying, with fraudulent statements. These will probably be superseded by, or could be superseded by, more serious charges related to terrorism. But we'll see. But there is this. This is a case that you wanted them to disrupt. At least that's how it looks. And you know, training in a foreign terrorist training camp is a serious offense. And has been, and particularly after, you know, the statute was passed for material support that pertained to training. But you have to know that this case allegedly was about IEDs, which we have not seen in terrorist trials in this country yet. It also involves Afghans. There's a lot of things to pay attention to in this case that are new and a different turn in terms of the threat that we face.
Karen Greenberg, Executive Director of the Center on Law and Security at NYU Law School. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we continue our door-to-door series on your commute. Today, how transportation policy affects your commute. Stay tuned.